Daryl Dorman wrapping up this hour of Music Power. Now, you stay tuned. Lunchtime at the Oldies with my special guest Tom Shannon is next. But first, this message brought to you by Totino's. Stock up for the big, a bite-sized, easy-to-make snack. Want people to cheer for you? Give them Totino's Pizza Roll.
You're in tune with Detroit's only local station, WPON, Walled Lake, Detroit.
Talking Oldies.
Jukebox John on this special edition of Lunchtime at the Oldies. It's high noon in the Motor City, and we want to say hi to all of our great friends tuning in on the World Wide Web at WPON.com. And we want to welcome to our WPON airwaves Tom Shannon, no stranger to anyone who listened to CKLW in the 1960s. Tom started with CK in 1964, took over the nighttime duties from Terry Knight, who went into recording and producing records as Terry Knight in the past. And Tom's fluid delivery met full acceptance from not only teenagers, but to the more sophisticated listeners, and he made everyone comfortable and part of the show. The sun never sets on the Shannon Empire was known far and wide by his loyal audience, and let's not forget the bearskin rug as well. And we've got Tom on the line right now. Tom Shannon, thank you for joining us. How are you, my good friend?
Good morning, John. You're so up and ready here, and I'm in oldies heaven here. I just heard, Harold Dorman? You might as well play the original and do the good stuff, Chuck Berry. I'm fine, John. It's early morning in California, but early morning for me now since I retired, you know.
That's right. And spent 18 years in the Motor City, and you grew up in the Buffalo area, right, Tom?
That's hometown, yeah. Myself and the guys like Dick Purton and Jim Edwards, Big Jim Davis was his real name, but Jim Edwards, and Tom Clay came out of Buffalo. I don't know if that was his real hometown, but he started there before he became Jack the Bellboy.
Sure.
A lot of history to both cities, both Detroit and Buffalo. They worked together so many times.
Right. Now, let me ask you a question. Did the radio bug hit you early, or was it something that you kind of slid into by accident? How did it all happen for you at a very young age?
Well, it really was kind of both. I was interested in show business, but I was interested, believe it or not, John, into being a cameraman. I wanted to be a television cameraman ever since, 48 or whenever they started.
Well, sure, why not? Yeah, I thought about that.
Yeah. Enough to certainly remember that very vividly. So I wanted to be a cameraman, and I also was an art student, and I was a draw. You know, I loved to draw, and I loved to do things like that, so I ended up going to college. But before I even got to college, I was on the school newspaper at the high school I attended in Buffalo, and there was a what they called then a Coke party, which is had a different meaning than today. And I went to this Coke party, and just to get out of class, I suppose, but it was a movie called There's No Business Like Show Business with Ethel Merman and Betty Grable and Dan Daly, and Johnny Ray was one of the quote stars, and he had a big record called Cry and Little White Cloud, so on and so forth. So I went there, interviewed him, and I met a guy who was hosting it who was really an exploitation or what is called marketing guy in the movie business, who had bought Radio Time and used the name Hernando from the pajama game Hernando's Hideaway.
Mm-hmm.
He had that was his theme song, and he was Italian, but he had used to wear a sombrero and the other trappings of a Mexican pro. He said to me, he said, "You sound like you're interested in radio. How'd you like to come out and we're having a contest?" I said, "Sure." I didn't have any idea that I was going to do that.
Hey, I can't say no to a man in a sombrero.
That's right. How can you say no? Say sí, señor. So I went out there, and I don't know how many weeks it took before it was all said and done, but I ended up winning. But by that time, not only the winning with what did they give you, a gift certificate and a few other things, what really, really set me was I was hooked. I was hooked on this business. So I started virtually at 15 years of age.
My. Now, you started out at, was it WXRA?
See, John, you've been doing your homework.
Well, just a little bit. Just a little bit.
Those call letters don't exist per se today, I don't think. They're now something else. But, yes, it was 1,000 Water outside of the city of Buffalo, and in Kenmore, I think was the city of license, but which is like saying in Troy or something, or Wall Lake, which, by the way, I did many record hops at Wall Lake in the casino of the old days.
Yeah, oh, of course. And we've got so many people that call me up and, you know, just reminisce about those days, too. And we'll talk a little more about that as well. But you're in high school and you're also working at the radio station at the same time?
Yes, I must admit that it was kind of a combination of doing staff announcing, if you will, because in those days you had transcription programs.
Sure.
I did things like, now, ladies and gentlemen, the Three Sons. Or I was the local announcer for the HOBA Champions Network, which, of course, in New York were the Yankees.
Okay.
So I did that, and Mel Allen was the voice of the Yankees. That'll give you an idea of what era it was, 1955, 56, something like that. So, yeah, that was what I did, but it was also a little bit of take care, clean up a little bit after, go out and do some gardening. I mean, they would, obviously pay you the very minimum wage.
Tom, I've been there. I know exactly. Everything but climbing the tower and shining the bulb on top of the light of the transmitter. I understand. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So you read some commercials between innings and did the news probably from time to time. And, well, you got your feet wet, right?
I did, and then the news thing was my actual channel to get to the bigger station, which was WKBW, which was a huge station, 50,000 watts, and of course it was NBC, and it had all those wattage. It was the only one in the area that had that kind of power. As we know, in the Detroit area, it's CKLW and WJR that have the 50,000 on AM radio, but I went to this station as a newsman, part-time newsman. The guy that I had started and replaced at the small station ended up going to the big station, and he was a banker, and he retired and then eventually passed away. He was an older man, but I replaced him, and that's how I got my foot in the door. And then one day the program director came by, and he put his hand on my shoulder, and I was at the teletype machine, and he said, and of course I thought I was big time at that point. I was cupping my ear with those brush earphones.
Sure.
And those old Clevite brushes, which were made out of plastic. And he said to me, "You don't really want to be a newsman, do you?" And I went, I thought it was the lead in out the door. And I said, "Well, yeah, I don't know." And I I wanted to be honest about it because I really was fascinated. They had just made a decision to go top 40, to really do the format change. And this is 1958 now.
Okay.
And I'm still, 15, 16, 17, 18 years of age.
My, oh my.
And, so I'm the kid, and guys like Irv, well, you wouldn't know those names, but Irv Weinstein, they hired him in. They had Dick Biondi, you know that name.
Sure, absolutely.
Russ the Moose Syracuse, a lot of the guys are no longer with us, so on and so forth. So anyway, I get to this big station, put me on the weekend, and from there it's like a skyrocket. It was wonderful, absolutely fabulous,
Did they want you to more or less, did they groom you as a top 40 disc jockey? Did you just step right in there cold turkey and go right on the air? I mean, that's kind of tough from switching from news to music right away.
It was, but I was always and always have been a music wacko. I mean, I was always I guess they would call you a geek. I mean, I always liked...
No, I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
I always liked music. I collected it. I did everything. I knew the stories. I knew the people, or at least eventually I knew the people. But, I mean, in those days, I loved everything. I just was fascinated with the music end of it. I mean, I had gotten so hooked on that part of it that I try to keep it closeted while I was a newsman, but that was the real thing for me. I mean, when they said that, I just went, and no, they didn't give me any particular instructions other than don't talk a lot, which, again, was, after a while, that was the way the top 40 was, because most guys in those days talked forever. I mean, you could
just ramble on. Yes, and fast.
You can still do a little of that, obviously, today, but not much.
Yes, I understand. So here you are. You're 18 years old. Now you're a disc jockey in Buffalo. Were you on at night or during the day? What was your air shift? Do you remember?
Actually, both, John, because it was on weekends.
Weekends. Okay.
And they just put me on Saturday and Sunday, and then I started to do some replacement work. But by and large, on weekends, it was Saturday afternoon and then Saturday evening. I mean, they would really use you to fill a lot of the time slots. So you really had the choice time. And being a young guy, I mean, I was younger than most of the audience, or as young as. And so they've kind of grown up with me there, and even in Detroit when I came in later on in Detroit, or the Detroit area, if you will, because it was Windsor and then it was XYZ and so on and so on. But the audience was always approximately my age, or at least they perceived it as I was the same age.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, well, that's great. Now, really, it really kicked into high gear, though, when Dick Biondi left KBW to go to Chicago, right? And that's when you took over his nighttime air shift, correct?
Exactly. And before that even happened, by the way,
mm-hmm.
and this is another, could be a whole other subject, but they said to me, Tom, we really want to give you this little break. We think you can do it. You're a young guy. You got the interest. You got the verve. We think you can do it. And I went, great. Oh, I was so excited.
Yeah.
And then they said, but we can't give you a theme song. I said, can I have one like Dick Scott or like Russ Syracuse or Perry Allen or something? They said, no, that's too much money. We have to pay Pam's or whatever the jingle company is. We have to pay them big bucks to make one up for you. So he said, find an instrumental, find something you can use, or make one up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I think it came home to roost. I made one up, and it became a top 10 record years later, but it was a theme that I knew had something, as simple as it was. Again, I'm not George or Ira Gershwin, but myself and my partner, who at the time became my partner, was Phil Todaro, who was Hernando.
He and I
co-wrote the theme song. We put it together with the Russ Allen Trio to sing it on the radio, and people used to beg me to, and of course people in Detroit really don't know much about that part of it because it was a theme that I never carried with me, but those that know the music end of it know that the song, what it became, and so on and so forth. But yeah, that's part of the story, that whole thing with the record.
Well, Tom, I was going to save that little story for later, but is this just a little bit of it? Now, this is not by the original group that recorded it for you, but later on, Swan Records got involved, and this, I believe, was the record or the song you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's it, right?
Yeah.
Now, there were actually words to this song, right?
Absolutely.
All right. You want to sing the words? Because I don't know them.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
Tommy Shannon Show, Baby Radio, Top Tunes, News and Weather, so glad we can get together. I can't hear the music.
That's all right, yeah, okay.
But so glad we can get together on the Tom Shannon Show.
Gotcha. Oh, you did great.
It was very simple, but I mean, that's the melody.
Absolutely, yes.
And the kids that did it came to me at a record hop and said, do you mind if we play your theme? And I went, what? They said, well, no, just instrumentally. And I liked it so much, I looked at Phil, who was with me, and I said, what do you think? He said, I think we ought to get in the studio and record it. So we did.
Yeah.
Play about $85 worth of studio time, went into a little studio and did four sides. We did about four takes on that, and even with the bad meter of the drummer, I mean, the drummer is a little off meter at the end, if you know,
mm-hmm.
but it was so good. It was done in mono, of course. There was no stereo at the time, or at least there wasn't in the studio that I was in. It was all done monaurally, and the guy didn't even play bass. I mean, the bass man wasn't there. The guitarist played a bass line.
My, but, oh my. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and that became a million. And you know what? Interestingly enough, John, today, in the last 4 or 5 years, I've licensed it to Friends. NBC does the licensing for Friends. I put it on there. And those are sync rights, synchronization rights, which, oddly enough, pay much more than basic royalties.
Oh, great.
And then I licensed it twice, a different version now done by NRBQ. I licensed it twice on The Simpsons. And it's on a movie recently called Arthur and the Invisibles with Madonna and Snoop Doggy Dogg or something.
Oh, my. Is that right?
But it's all sync rights. So every time you do one of those, it's, you know, it's like $8,000 or $10,000 plus the writer credits come from the publisher. And I don't own the publishing. I've sold that years ago. But anyway, it's been fun.
That is a great story. And it just all happened so quick, just like your career. Now, Tom, you spent some time in the Army. Was this after you took over on KB for Dick Biondi? Or where was that in your career?
Yes, this was about 61, I think. I was doing a television show, too. I was doing Buffalo Bandstand.
Right, you were on TV. Mm-hmm.
2 hours, which is kind of like Swingin' Time or
sure.
or something like that, or what they did at Club 1270. But, yes, I did Bandstand, and I was doing the radio show at night. Everything was on top of the world. Station was far and above number one. It was a giant radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to draft me.
Oh, my.
Yeah, because in those days, they still had the draft, even though it was after Korea and before Vietnam really got going. The French were, I think, in Vietnam. But so they had the draft still in effect, and I knew I was going to be called. And I try to head it off because they called me for the physical. I went to do the physical, and I said, I have osteomyelitis, same thing Mickey Mantle and others have. It's a bone marrow inflammation, and I had it lanced and everything, and I had to bat in my right leg and my tibia.
Okay.
And they said, and I had a doctor, a specialist, who had signed a letter, and I gave it to the draft board, and they said, doesn't matter. And they put me through everything, and they said, we're going to take you, and your call will be in the next 3 weeks or month. And I went, oh, geez, so this didn't work. I didn't want to leave, you know.
Yeah, sure, you're on top of the world right now.
And I said, I had just purchased a Corvette. I had a Corvette, which was quite an anomaly in those days because it was $5,000. Most cars were $2,400.
Sure.
If you got a good one, unless you bought a Cadillac, which probably were a little more akin to that, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 range. But I had a Corvette.
And in Buffalo, too, you know.
On the radio.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
on top of the world. Anyway, what I did, John, was I went to the National Guard, and I said, please. And they said, we can't take you. You have osteomyelitis. I said, wait a minute. I said, you can't take me, but the Army can.
A different set of standards, I see.
Well, it was. And I begged the guy, and he was the commander of the thing. And I said, look, the Army's going to take me. Why won't you do this? And I said, look, and here's what. He said, oh, I know who you are. Yeah, I listened to you on the radio. So he said, well, okay, we can do this. And he said, you still got to do the 6 months active duty. We'll activate you. And I said, okay. So I got into the National Guard. So I wasn't RA, regular Army. I was Army National Guard. But they did activate me much sooner than I thought. I was at Fort Dix in New Jersey, which is a reception center, really, with 40,000 men. It's an open post. And I went there, and I was only an E-2 private. I hadn't gone and taken ROTC, even though I had a college education, et cetera. I wasn't going to be an officer, that's for sure. So I was doing KP duty one day, and I got a phone call, and it was Bernie Benick from Swan Records, who I knew was a promotion man, you know, coming around to visit the station.
Sure, sure.
He had heard this record, and he wanted me to lease it to him or sell it to him. And I said, Bernie, I'm in the Army. I can't do anything about that. The tape is in my basement, and my dad doesn't know anything about show business, and my mom is a little more akin, but, you know, she works and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Well, I finally was in line to get shots. They're going to ship me to AIT training, I think, some artillery, whatever it was, in Georgia, I think. And I was in line. I was getting shots, and they were checking us. And a staff sergeant, a guy who was a medical attaché, said, hey, soldier, what's wrong with your leg? Because he could see I was standing in what they called skivvies in my shorts, and as were the other soldiers. And he said, what's wrong with your leg? And I said, oh, well, I've got osteomyelitis. He said, what? I said, I got osteomyelitis, Sarge. He said, get out of the line. I said, but, get out of line. I said, but they take me. Get out of line. The Army's not going to pay for you. And he sent me over to the Waltham Army Hospital, which was on the base at the time, and they pulled me out of line. I went over there, and the guy who's sitting there typing stuff out, I don't know if you want to hear this whole story.
No, this is great. No.
the guy who's typing things out, the little, I think he was a spec 4, whatever the rank was, but he was typing things out, but he was attached to the medical wing. So he had this big, huge pile of papers of guys who wanted to get out of the Army, I guess, or had medical problems.
Yeah.
And he said to me, what's your name? I said, Thomas. Yeah, Shannon, S-H-A-N-N. What's your address? And then he stopped and he said, Thomas, he said, not Tom Shannon. And I said, what? He said, well, I'm from Batavia, New York. And he said, are you the guy on the radio I listen to all the time, Tommy Shannon? I said, yeah, because it's my real name. It's not a made-up name.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, holy smokes. He said, God, what are you doing here? And I said, well, that's what I'd like to know. And I said, I'm going to see the doctor about, he said, what's wrong? I've got osteomyelitis, blah, blah, blah. He said, well, I'll sign a thing for you. Take this down and x-ray. They'll x-ray your leg. Bring the x-ray back. Come back here. The captain or the doctor is not here at the moment. He will be back probably by the time you're done. So I came back up, and he shifted the paper from the bottom of the pile, which I would have been 3 or 4 hours or days later. He put it right on top. So I went in to see the captain. He looked at me, banged on my leg, looked at the, when I say bang, took a little hammer.
Yeah, little hammer. Oh, yeah. I know what you mean.
To check your reflexes and all of that. And
sure.
He looked at it, and he looked at the x-ray, and he said, do you have any pain? I said, no, only when it, you know, the weather changes, sometimes I can feel it in my bones, because they had a drill into my tibia, you know, and I had a big scar and so on and so forth. So he said, soldier, unlace your boots, and he did all that, and he finally said, "I got some bad news for you." I thought, "Oh my God, what's it gonna?" Because I know if you get it in your spinal cord, you're dead. If you get it in other parts of the body, they try to remove some of that because it's really very, very serious. And they had told me, "Don't ride horses, don't ski, don't." And I do all of that stuff. Or I did. So he said, "Bad news for you." I said, "What's wrong?" He said, "You're out of the army." And I said, "Oh, gee."
Yeah, let me start crying right now. Those were tears of joy.
I said, "If I lean over and give you a kiss, Captain, I'll really be out of the army."
Yeah.
So anyway, from that point, I was on medical hold for another 3 months or 2 months. It took forever to process me out with get my DD-214 and my papers and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was my army career, which probably lasted a total of, I don't know, 6 months, 8 months, something like that.
So did KBW just take you right back? Did you get? I mean, how did it work? Did you just slide right on back?
They were supposed to take you back, and they did.
Yeah.
And at that point, I'm trying to remember. I remember calling there. I got the change that they gave you from $71 my pay or something, which bought Brasso at that time cigarettes and maybe a couple of phone calls because you had to stand in line and put the change in. But I remember calling the station and saying, "Please don't do anything. I'll be out of here. I'm. They're going to let me out."
Yeah.
Of course, that was 2 months down the road from when they actually let me out. But when they did, yes, they gave me the job back, and I stayed there probably another year and a half. And then I did a foolish thing. I took because there was more money involved. Somebody came along from WGR, which was an opposing station, 55 on the dial, 550, if you will.
Okay.
A very powerful signal because at the low end, as you know, you can get further AM radio. And he said, that's before the days of the internet and all that, but he said, "Listen, we want you." It was Mike Joseph, who was a big, at the time, one of the first consultants. And he said, "We'll give you, I don't know, $5,000 more a year. We'll give you your own television show," because WGR had a television station. "And we'll give you another television show, and you can have the prime spot in the afternoon drive, and you can do this." And I thought, gee. And they played a jingle. I really didn't make up my mind that quick, but eventually I finally acquiesced and did so. But I was only there for a year, and then they switched and changed formats, sold the place to Taft, and I left KBW. Then they brought me back, but by this time, while Weekend was a big hit, I had some money. I had invested in a studio, a recording studio, to do commercials and to make some records and do all that. And it was a beautiful building and all of that that I had leased, and I fixed it all up, bought the Neumann Telefunken microphones and all of that stuff. But, you know, again, in Buffalo, it wasn't exactly the recording capital of the world.
Gotcha.
In those days, it never did become that. But
yeah.
Anyway, so I did that, and I finally, when GR left, they severed me with money, of course. They give you a bit of whatever's left on your contract plus a stipend there. So I was all right financially, but I just didn't have a job. So I'm working in the studio probably 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And Joey Reynolds is the guy they brought in, who was from Buffalo also. You may know that name. Joey was...
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, big name in the business.
Sure.
After those years, he wasn't then, but a very clever jock. And Joey had come into Detroit, I think, at XYZ for about 10 minutes.
Right. But he had a cup of coffee here.
He was probably the worst guy. He and Tom Clay were probably the worst judges of what to do. I mean, they were very clever and terrifically creative, but
great on the air, but
they went against the grain, so that didn't work. So
right.
Joey's worked at more radio stations probably than myself and Tom Clay combined, and I know Tom worked at a lot of places too.
I met Joey Reynolds one time, and I started asking him, "How many stations did you work at?" And he took out a calculator, and I knew I was in trouble.
Absolutely. Yeah, he really works. Now he's pretty much secure with working at ORS's base in New York,
right,
in Manhattan, and I think he's on about 150 stations across the country.
He's been on
overnight,
yeah.
And he seems to thrive there, and he's done very well, and he's straightened the act out a lot. I mean, his personal life, so... That's great. I'm glad for Joey. He's a nice kid.
Okay, now let's turn the clock up just a little bit to 64. Okay, and there's a radio station in Windsor, CKLW, with another 50,000 water.
Right.
And there's an opening, and a gentleman by the name of Terry Knight is the nighttime jock over there. And a lot of people here remember the late Terry Knight very well. They remember him from his days at WJBK as one of the Jack the Bellboy's guys.
Right.
And he also, of course, came to CKLW and had the nighttime shift down and was doing very well. But he, too, had the bug for the big time when it came to producing records and making records. And we even play some of his songs here at WPON, believe it or not.
Terry in the Pack.
Terry Knight in the Pack. So now he's getting ready to ship out. And how do you get word that they're looking for somebody? And how did it all transpire for the interview? And then when did you find out that you locked down the job at CKLW?
Well, to make a long, I never can make a long story short. I always say that, and then I always go on and on. But there's so many things that it's so convoluted. But here, let me tell you, I'm working late at night in the studio, and again, don't have my mind on anything. But I get a call from Bernie Benek, who now we've become. He's my Dutch uncle. You know, we've become friends since the Wild Weekend and Freddie Cannon and all that Swan family.
Now he's at Swan Records.
Well, he calls, and he said, "Tommy, I've got. I'm having dinner with Dave Schaefer here from Detroit, and I'm over here at the Scotch and Sirloin, I think he said." And he said, "Dave wants to talk to you." I said, "Okay." So he puts him on. He said, "Hi, Tom. Dave Schaefer." I said, "Hi, Dave. How are you?" He said, "Fine." He said, "Listen." He said, "Our nighttime guy, Terry Knight." He said, "No pun intended." He said, "Wants to go on and do some things with the Rolling Stones," is what he was talking about.
Uh-huh.
And he said, "There's going to be an opening, and then, you know, it's announced and everything, and we'd love to have you come here." I said, "Geez, I don't know, Dave. I'm working in the studio." At that point, I knew that the studio wasn't going to go, you know, to become the biggest thing in the world. So I said, "Well, okay." I said, I'll drive in, because Detroit's not that far, is it?" He said, "No, down the road through Canada, you'll be here in 4 or 5 hours. So I made a meet with Dave, and I drove in. I think we met at the Big Boy right around 8 Mile and the John Lodge. I think you got right off, and
yeah,
there was
one there at one time. That's for sure.
Was it one time? I've been back many times, but I don't remember seeing that when I was back. Anyway, yeah, it was the Big Boy, and I met Dave, who, by the way, was just the best.
I was going to ask you about Dave, but
he became probably my almost best friend in the world. He was just a super guy. Just, I can't say enough about Dave. But anyway, he said, "Come on up to the house and stay, and we'll go over, we'll visit." And at that time, it was John Gordon, who was program director. John was a wonderful man, very gentlemanly, but, you know, not into the modern world. I mean, it really wasn't a contemporary of what they were trying to do.
Uh-huh.
And it was called Radio 8-0 with Bud Davies and Ron Knowles. And the nighttime was always up for grabs since Tom Clay and then Terry. And so I got to meet Terry. And so I stayed with Dave out in Southfield, is where Dave lived. And I spent, another 2 days, I think. And he showed me all around and took me all. I mean, he was really terrific. And he was one of the reasons that and another 50,000 watts and a chance to go back and do some things. It was just a good deal for me. And then when I came back in to actually take the job, because they had offered it to me and I accepted, and had to plan now to get out of everything that I had back there, and they gave me enough time, because Terry had given him enough time, enough notice.
Sure.
Went back, and when I did, Terry said, "Why don't you stay at my place?" So I became friends with Terry, and
wow,
went out to, Terry Knapp was his real name, K-N-A-P-P, and Terry was out of, I think, Flint, somewhere up in that area.
Right, exactly. That's where he got his start in radio.
Pontiac, was he, or further up?
he got his...
I stayed with Terry for, I think, a couple of days. And he took me out there because he was doing the Wall Lake Casino, which was more of a what they call frat and grease. I think it was more of a grease place, you know. There was, and Terry was Mr. doing the British Invasion and all of that, so that didn't play very well. And Terry wasn't too accepted there, but he did want to go right for the Rolling Stones. He had that in his mind. I said, "Are you sure you want to give him?" He said, "Oh yeah, I want to do this." So he was very positive, and he left, and of course he did very well with the Pack, who became Grand Funk, but
right,
that was a little bit later, and then he did some other things, but, and he was a nice man too, so, I mean, I did meet some nice people along the way, and that's kind of how it all sort of came together, but it was because of Dave Schaefer, who made the initial call with Bernie Benek, and then because of Terry, I ended up taking the job, and as Radio 8-0, we did very well. We had a wonderful time. Those were the days of the Bearskin Rug, as you alluded to, and and what was it, The Sun Never Sets and the Shannon Empire, which I borrowed from the British Empire, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, just a great story. And, you know, we've got a little something here we want to play for you. We've got an air check from you in those early days at CKLW from 1965. And it runs a few minutes. So why don't you give it a listen, and we'll let everybody listen to it right now, okay?
Okay, John.
All right, here we go. 1965.
You're in the Pepsi generation.
Here's the good news for the Pepsi generation. Diet and regular Pepsi now come to you in convenient 8-packs, 12-ounce, non-returnable bottles.
CKLW, it's the motor city.
Number 5, 1 year ago from Leslie Gore, and Maybe I Know.
Maybe I Know that he's been cheap.
Now, Tommy, can you hear that all right?
I can fine, yes.
Okay, great.
Maybe I know.
From 1 year ago, it was done by Leslie Gore, and Maybe I Know. It's 13 in front of 7 on Hit Pack CK, The Shannon Show, all the way up until 12 midnight. You're on The Shannon Empire.
And it's mainly because of the meat. Because of the meat. Because of the meat. Because of the meat.
Mainly because of the meat. The meat of the song, number 4 from 1 year ago. Ring the bell for the Drifters. Let's go into the boardwalk.
Peekaboo, I got you.
Oh, when the sun beats down, boardwalk, boardwalk. We'll be having some fun
under the boardwalk.
People walking around
under the boardwalk.
We'll be falling in love
under the boardwalk.
Boardwalk.
Under the boardwalk from the Drifters. Big Sound number 4 from 1 year ago today. It's 9 minutes in front of 7 on CK.
Wake up and live. You're in the hit by generation.
It's CKLW.
Radio 80, the station that's all hard.
Is high school the end of the line? Phone or write for a free career information today. Call Woodward 2 3480. I'd like to repeat that number for you. Woodward 2 3480 or write Automation Institute, 150 Michigan Avenue, Detroit 26, Michigan. Today, open Monday through Friday until 9 o'clock.
You like bread and butter? I know I did. I did a year ago. I still do. These are the new beats on CK, 8 before 7.
I like bread and butter.
Bread and butter was done by the new beats at 6 minutes before 7. 71 degrees. It's kind of a wild, wailing, weird, wonderful world of Wednesdays, right? It's right in the middle of the week on Radio 80 and the Motor City's on CK.
Where in the world is it Christmas time?
How do you like that, Tommy? Tom, did I lose you? Oh, my, I lost Tommy. Oh, geez. I'm going to call him right back. I tell you what we're going to do. Let's play Tom's song that was so big, Wild Weekend, and we'll see if we can get him back on with us here because we've lost the connection, and that happens from time to time. Here, we'll try and hook up back with Tom.
Thank you.
think we're back with Tom. Tom, are you there, my good friend?
I'm here in California. I'm here.
I hope you were able to hear that air check fairly well.
I did, and you know what, John? That's interestingly enough, that was pretty good stuff considering that was way before it was, I think it was 68 when we, no, it was earlier than that. It was 66, I think. But by next year, we had gone to Drake Chenault and became really, literally the Big 8. Those days, we were still Radio 8-0.
Yeah.
And, you know, could do a lot more, if you will, free things. That's why the Bearskin Rug and Sun Never Sets and Elmo the Worm, I had all these characters because I was doing 6 hours at night, which I won't say is unheard of today, but they, when they came in with, when Paul Drew, my boss, came in and said, we're going to keep you and Dave Schaefer, and everybody else got the Ziggy. Everybody else went elsewhere.
Yeah.
Bonnie Knowles and Bud Davies and the late Joe Vann. Joe went up to Montreal. Bud went to, I think, Florida at that time or went to Toronto. Anyway, most of the guys were gone except Dave and I were left. But then it became the Big 8 and became even bigger. I mean, the station already was doing well, although I think we were always vying with Keener. Keener was the big one, XY.
Sure.
He was a player, certainly on the east side, where Keener didn't reach of Detroit itself, the big city.
I knew that. I grew up on the east side. I could barely get it.
Could barely get it at, yeah, 13, whatever they
13,
were.
13-10, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. So you did grow up on the east side, so you know.
And, I know, for a fact. Yeah, that was very hard to get. But, you know, it's ironic that you bring that up because I was going to ask you about Paul Drew and the fact that that came into play in 1966. And it kind of took the creativity away from some of the jocks. How did you feel at the time when they said, well, you've got to say this at this time, you know, after out of every song, you got to say CKLW and this and either time and this and then whatever. How did you feel? Did you feel it was too formatted or were you just willing to give it a try?
Well, I was willing to give it a try, especially when they said, and I mean, the guy said, Paul Drew even said to me, this is the honest to God truth. He said to me, well, you and Dave, he brought us into, I think what then, before it was the record library, it was a cafeteria, a little room,
uh-huh,
and he brought us in there, and we sat down, he got coffee or something, and he said, you know, he said, I really hate to do this, and he said, but I love your Bearskin Rug, and I like the Empire, and I like this. He said, I like a lot of the things you're doing. He said, it's going to kill me to do it, but he said, that's the only way we succeed. He said, I know it's a proven fact if we do this and this. And I kept going, oh, geez, oh, gosh. And then he said, but we're going to make your, you know, now you come in from, what was it, 6 till midnight or, mm-hmm, you know, 6 till 11:30 or 7 to 11, whatever it was about 6 hours worth. He said, now you're going to do 3 hours, and we're going to give you $5,000 more a year.
Hey, right? Bingo, that's fine with me.
I'll work with it. So I did, because let's be honest about it. When I started in radio, and even in the days of Buffalo, when they said to me, you're going to replace Dick Biondi, even the money then sounds so crummy today, but it was fabulous to be able to make, plus you would make money in record hops.
Sure, that's where you made your big money, yeah.
Well, you really did, and you went all around doing, I had the Shannon Caravan after a while, which at that point was Davey Schaefer kept busy with Surfside, or wherever it was, different places, and I did the same thing, but I did two and three in a night. We used to truck around Paul Revere and the Raiders and the Motown Acts. We put them in a station wagon or a van at the time and just drive them around, and Cannibal and the Headhunters. I never forget that.
Oh, wow, yeah.
All the Tito kids, and of course, I speak Spanish, but, you know, fairly well. But so, and I used to talk to them, but they were, that was really funny to have these kids come in. They had never seen cold weather or even knew anything about that part of the world, and here they were pulled out of East Los Angeles or wherever, and they're in the northeast of the, anyway,
playing a sock hop somewhere on the west side of Detroit, right?
Yeah.
That is just amazing. Hey, you know, Paul Drew. Now we want to let everybody know that he, of course, did not only with this format change, did that not only take effect at CKLW. How many stations did he reformat like that with that Drake Chenault format? There was, you know, all the big stations throughout the United States. There were countless numbers, correct?
Yeah, and of course the Drake Chenault original part was part of RKO General, which was the RKO Pictures, Radio Pictures, and General Tire and Rubber. If you remember on the I-94, there was a huge, it may still be there, I'm not even sure, the I-94 and the John Lodge, there was this huge sort of oval-shaped billboard that was all electric. It's set on a General Tire and Rubber company, and up there they used to put, I'll never forget, I was driving back to wherever I was think, an apartment or something, or bought a house in Farmington at one point. But anyway, I was driving, and I said, "Oh my God, there's my name up on the billboard."
Uh-huh.
Tom Shannon, you know, CKLW, such and such. But yes, it was owned by RKO General, and they had stations. WRKO they owned in Boston. They owned what's the one? KHJ Los Angeles.
Yes.
KFRC. Uh-huh. San Francisco,
so
they owned a bunch of them. You're
yeah,
right.
All the RKO stations were now under this new format. Now, Paul Drew, my understanding was very strict. Is that true? Was there actually a red phone or some sort of phone or connection to him, and he'd be listening, and if you didn't give the time or give out the call letters at the right time, or if you just, swayed away, just the very least away from the format the way it should be, you heard from that gentleman.
Absolutely, and keep in mind that we used to call it, endearingly, the bat phone.
Okay.
But it was a red phone, as I remember.
Yeah.
I think through Pat Holliday or some of the guys a little later on would probably remember even better. But anyway, it used to go off, and there was probably a 500 watt bulb or something in there. And when it rang, it didn't ring. Literally, it just buzzed, or the light went off.
Yeah.
You could get a suntan even if if he called you. And only a couple of times did he ever call. But he was notorious. Yes, he was strict. But I got to tell you, it's like working for the teacher that's the hardest on you. They're the ones you learn the most from or respect the most. I mean, I really did respect Drew. Only one day, I think he wanted us to count how many we played in a row. At night, if we had not a commercial set, they used to block out a full hour, and there was so many songs you had to count by. And you had to do this in your head, or at least on paper right in front of you. You'd have to count how many songs, what the timing was, and how many could you squeeze in and say, "This is the first of 27 in a row," or whatever it was. And I said, "The first of 27 in a row," and it was actually 28 or something that came out. And he called, and he had one of the strangest voices. He said, "Top?" I said, "Yes." And this light went off, and he said, "You played 28. I mean, he knew. He used to, in the shower, he was the first to do this, I think, notoriously so, would carry a portable transistor radio in those days and put it in his pocket or where, I don't know where he put it when he was in the shower, but
yeah.
He would even listen in the shower when he was out to dinner with people. It was very impolite.
Oh, I heard that. I've heard that. He went out to dinner with people and had a transistor plug, ear plug in his ear.
And before the days of he had a cell phone, good God, he'd really be on you, but
yeah.
He would have to excuse himself.
Yeah, go to a payphone and
call you on the hotline.
Unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. Wow, that is
we
great.
We could hear, there was a program line that was in there that Bill Drake, for example, out in California, would be sitting in the pool. I'll never forget, he called me one night, he and Bill Watson, who was his national program director, and they were in the pool, sitting on the, whatever it is, a little raft or something,
mm-hmm.
and drinking lime wickies or something, and called me on the phone, and he said, "Hi, Tom, it's Bill Drake." I said, "Oh, hi, Bill, how are you?" And he said, "Fine." He said, "We're listening to you right now, Bill and I," and he said, "This is terrific." He said, "You sound great." I said, "Well, that's wonderful." And I'm thinking, Jesus, he's in California, and I'm here in Windsor, Ontario.
Yeah.
Oh, in Detroit, what's going on? And, it was just a terrific time, though. I must tell you that it just swelled everything because it was as big as anything could be. The only thing even close to that would have been if you had gone to LS in Chicago, which had 50,000 watts all the way around in the center of the country. But, I mean, you reached so many places and so many people, and the station was such a giant, and it helped not only American artists but Canadian artists who, to this day, I would sure, fall down on their knees and say thank you. Paul Ika said that to me numerous times. If it wasn't for CK, I wouldn't have a second career. He said, and I wouldn't be still doing this today. He said they really did with You're Having My Baby in that era and that ilk later on. Gordy Lightfoot, the same thing.
Sure, sure. So
it was quite a station.
Oh, absolutely. You did some TV work at Channel 9, too, did you not? You had a show called The Lively Spot for a short while?
John, you've been doing your homework. Yeah, oddly enough, I don't know if you remember this or not, but Robbie Seymour had finally joined us. He was doing Swingin' Time, which was a very successful daily show. And I think it was falling apart a little bit, and they had a new guy brought into television, a new general manager of the TV station, which obviously operated separately from radio, and he decided that Robbie, who always looked younger than he was by far, a sweet guy, he really was, a nice man, they said, Robert is too old, he's got to do this, or the show's got to have a fresher approach. So they bring me over from radio, and I went, oh, my God. So I had to do the television show, which we did every day, then run over to radio, which was in the same building in those days, and I on Riverside Drive, and I would run over. And I remember saying to Robin that I was really sorry that that happened. I said, it wasn't my call. He said, hey, listen, he said, I've replaced some people. And he said, I know it's not anybody's call. You take the job, you take what's offered if you like it. And I said, well, I thought, what's not to like? But they did that for another, oh, I don't know, 6 months, and then they decided to change it. And then we went to a live band with a bunch of the Funk Brothers. I had Richard Pistol Allen on drums, Dennis Coffey and Mike Theodore.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Babbitt, all these guys that are in the standing in the shadows of Motown, all the guys of the band who I knew from making records and doing a little dibbling in that area, but I knew them personally, and then they came on to be the backbone, and they were playing live, and they wanted me to do more live stuff than danceable. So it was a different approach to Lively Spot, and that went for about a year.
Well, that's just great. I mean, I do remember the show, and of course I grew up watching Swingin' Time with Robin. I used to run home from school and flick it on, and then where the action is would be on the ABC afterwards, and that was like my afternoon to get rid of all the steam from school. You know, that was the first thing we did when we got home from school. But just great stories. And You work at CKLW, and then doors open elsewhere for you here in the Motor City. Where did you go when you left from CK? Where did you go next?
I went to WJBK. It was really, I guess don't have to get into the particulars, but
yeah.
it was a clash between another general manager they brought in who was Canadian, and I guess story was, or the rumor was, that he did not particularly want Americans in there, and there were a number of us, Dave Schaefer, myself, and Davey actually told me that after. He said, this guy just is not crazy. He came from, I think it was Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, or someplace out of Regina, someplace out in the West, and he just couldn't truck with why all these Americans are working in Canada. And he didn't understand there's a heck of a, oh, I don't know what you'd call it, symbiotic relationship between the two countries.
Right, we're so close
right
in proximity.
In Detroit.
Yeah.
Anyway, he found a reason to remove me or to get me out of there. I mean, they paid me and everything, but so I went out of there and I thought, what am I going to do now? Will I go back to Buffalo? Will I go to another city? And I had turned down so many job offers, and I ended up, they were just switching things with WJBK. They had all those towers. They had, I don't know, seven towers or something, and they were 50,000 watts, but you could hear them up north, and you know, up in Traverse City, they were like a local, as they were even further up. I mean, they just 50,000 watts straight up north, the way the towers had gone.
Hmm.
And they were going to go to Top 40, or what was then pop music, Top 40.
Sure.
Because they had been something else. And so I ended up actually replacing Mark Avery. They moved Mark out because they figured he was too middle of the road for what they wanted to do. And I worked with guys like K.O. Bailey and Lee Baby Sims. These were guys who had big reputations and names, had worked in other major markets, and they had brought them all in to, you know, go after CK. And I thought, oh boy, so now I'm going to be against my old compadres in my old station. And so I worked there for, oh, I don't know, was it 8 months? And then they decided, JBK Store Broadcasting decided they were going to switch to country, and they begged me to stay. I said, what? I said, I'm not a country guy. And this would happen later on in my career when I went to the Tower. This is another era. When I went back to CK, I was back at CKLW three different times.
Yes, we realize that. You kept coming back, which is, you know, just a great story in itself.
Like like a bad Betty, John. I kept coming back. I kept saying, oh, I can't go back there. This man is gone. He's literally out of here. He got caught with his hand, if you will, in the cookie jar somehow. He apparently tried to be on the same team that was, because at one point the Canadian government said, RKO General, you're an American company. You can't own, oh, I don't remember what it was. I think you have to own 10% of the, that's all you can own. You couldn't own more than, and so they had to switch it. They had to, you know, get out to a Canadian company. So he was trying to be on the side of the Canadian company negotiating his position with RKO General locally. So he got caught in the middle, and I guess he since passed away, but I won't mention his name, but he was the guy that got me out of there. And so I thought, oh boy, well, you know, it all comes to, so I came back, and I came back three different times. So in one of the second or third time, I ended up going, because they wanted to go Rock and Talk, and Dick had been there, Dick Purton was there, who we go back 40, 48, 50 years.
Another Buffalo gentleman.
Oh, Dick and I go back so far that I remember I was working the all-night show in Buffalo one time, and Dick came and sat with me, and he called up and he said, can I come down and sit with him? He was just doing a little radio. I think he was the Guy King, which was the station name in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the last of the Guy Kings, or one of the last, which was kind of middle-of-the-road pop, but they didn't really do it. They didn't have much of a signal. And here's this talented man, and he comes by, and he sits there, and we're talking, and I said, let's go out. When I was all done, I said, let's go for coffee. So we went over to a place called Colonial House, which was about, a block and a half away from the station. And we're sitting there, and all of a sudden I'm talking. I said, how's Gail and your new daughter? He had just had a daughter named Jennifer, which was his oldest, who's now, I think, something with ABC or, the big networks or shit. They're all in show business, all of his daughters. And at that time, he only had the one. And he said, oh, she's with the baby. He said, oh, my God, I forgot to call her and tell her. Because Dick doesn't sleep very well. I mean, he really has a terrible time. And, I mean, he'll tell you this himself. I don't know if it's still the same. I'm sure it probably is. But he really could. For a guy that does mornings, has to get up at 3:30 or 4 in the morning or whatever to get to his position. He doesn't sleep very well. He tries to go to sleep, and he tosses and turns. And so anyway, he had gotten up, couldn't sleep, and came down and sat with me all night or for the rest of the night, overnight. And then we were having coffee, and then he decides he better call his wife. And she said, I got up, and you were gone. And she said, I was listening to Tom on the radio, and I heard somebody laughing in the background. And she said, I figured that's where you were. And he said, yeah. So, yeah, we go back a long way. He's a very talented creative guy, still working.
Yeah, still is, still going strong here in the Motor City at another station, and of course he's just an icon. Everybody knows he's a legend here in the Motor City. That's for sure.
Absolutely. I told him never leave. He said one of his frustrations was my hometown. Nobody knows who I am, which is almost true. I mean, in Buffalo, the guys in radio know who he is, certainly because he's so well known. But I said that's always been a frustration. I've tried a couple of times. Because we have a Hall of Fame here, which I'm in, and Joey's in, and Danny Nevert, another one of our guys that's been on the air here for 40 years, and a lot of other people are in our Hall of Fame. We have a book to do about that. And a couple of times I've suggested his name and, gave things about it, but so far he hasn't been voted in. But I suspect one day they will probably award him something. Not that he needs it. He's got them all over the world.
Yes, he does.
Country,
yeah, yeah. But he should have one in his hometown. That's for doggone sure.
Would be something, yes, because we've done that with Wolf Blitzer, who's from here. And
oh, okay.
I talked to Wolf, and then who else? The guy that does the NBC Meet the Press. All these guys.
Tim Russert.
Tim Russert, yeah.
Yes.
Tim Russert and Wolf Blitzer and who else? A couple of other guys who have sung my theme song. Don Crickey, the sports announcer.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
I just was with Don about 3 weeks ago.
Is that right?
Yeah,
is Don?
I go back for that every now and then because I'm in the Hall of Fame, and they invite you to come back. And if I get back into Western New York, I'll do that from out here on the central coast of California. But anyway, I don't mean to go on.
Oh, no, that's all right. Is Don retired now?
Don Crickey?
Yeah.
No. He's still, as far as I know, still working.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. I remember Don calling a football game in my youth when Tom Dempsey kicked a 63-yard field goal. He was doing the national coverage of the game for CBS.
Right.
And I remember that vividly. And Don was just an excellent football announcer, as well as he handled other sports, but he was just a number one in football, to be sure.
He's about 6'5 and still looks pretty terrific. Don's got to be, he's in my age category, sort of. I think he's a little younger, but I bet you Don is about 61.
Okay.
62.
Okay.
I'm guessing, because he went to St. Joseph's here, which was a high school that was opposite of where I went.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to tell me, I used to listen to you, and I said, oh, come on, Derek, everybody says that when you were a kid, right?
Well, Tom, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I'm going to open up the phone line just for a few minutes, because I know you've got to go here in a little bit, and we don't want to keep you on all afternoon or all morning. But let me just give out the phone number. If anybody would like to give a call real quick, like for Tom Shannon, the phone number is 248-557-1460. And, Tom, as it is, and as you probably know, I'm all by myself here. There's no one to answer these phones, so I've got to kind of do this haphazardly. So can you hold on just for 1 second?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay, you ready to go on the air? Yeah, hold on. We'll put you on. Okay. Oh, Kevin, hold on. Okay, buddy, hold on. That's probably not the most professional way of doing things, but we have to do what we can do here. I've got a good guy on the radio, and I'm somebody that you know who is on the air in the Motor City, and I'll let him say the words right here. You are on the air. Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, with two of my favorite radio people, Jukebox John and Tom Shannon. This is Kevin O'Neill. It's such a pleasure to talk to you.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, Tom. It is such an honor to listen to you. I'm sitting here. I'm just driving in. I'm going to work, but I don't want to get there because I want to hear the rest of what you're saying. And this is fascinating, and I just love hearing the stories. And growing up in Cleveland, I actually wanted to be a TV cameraman like you. I used to go down and sit in on the Mike Douglas show, and I thought that was so cool. I wanted to run camera, but then I got interested in radio, and I'd sit and listen to the Big 8 in Cleveland with that signal booming across Lake Erie. And honest to God, Tom, I thought to myself, I'll bet this is one of the nicest persons. And when I finally met you in 1980, I found out that you are just one of the nicest persons I've ever run across. Not only in this business, but ever. And I always looked up to you as inspiration to for what I did on the radio. I always thought to myself, if I could be one third or one fourth as good as this guy, I'll have a great career. So thank you for everything, Tom. You're the best.
Oh, Kevin, thank you. My goodness, I don't know what you guys got over there, but whatever it is, keep it up. I love it.
Well, I could talk to you all day, but there's so many others that want to get on. I'm going to let you go. God bless you, Tom. Thank you for everything.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, okay. Kevin. Thanks for calling. It's great that you could make it here this morning. We appreciate it.
I just love it. Thank you, John. Keep up the excellent work.
All right, my good friend.
Take care.
Okay. How about that?
Gee, that's terrific. Kevy is a nice man, too. He really is. And we've seen each other since the 80s, well, a number of times, but it was always at a party or at something, and we get together that way. But he's always been very, very kind and cordial, and very flattering, I might add that. Obviously, he's just been terrific. It's good for the, I don't know, it's the massage of the ego, I guess.
It's just when the microphone is on, you know, the talent has to come through. And with you and with guys like Kevin O'Neill, what can you say? You guys are just great talents behind the mic, no matter where you've been. And, your icons here in the Motor City. The lines are just jamming up here. And let's see what we can do here. this is so unprofessional, but this is the only way I can do it. I can't answer the phone any. Hold on just a second.
All right, go ahead.
I'd like to talk to Tom. Hold on, Greg. We'll get you on. All right. We've got another caller here. I got to hit a couple buttons, and let's do it right now.
Hey, Tom. How are you? It's another name out of the past, Greg Innes.
Hi, Greg. How are you? You know what? I heard your name, I think, the other day, or at least I thought I did. I was talking to, I'm going out to Phoenix. Now that I'm out in California, they figure it short, and a lady had said something about Greg did something, and I said, I'll bet it's Greg Innes who did this, because she was talking about having me be a speaker out in Phoenix, Arizona for all the, she has the website DetroitMemories.com, but it turns out it was another Greg named Stewart, who was, I think, from Canada originally, but both names, but your name popped into my mind first, and I said, Well, how are you, Greg?
I'm doing wonderful, and I just wanted to echo the sentiments of Kevin, and just what an honor it was for a person like myself to listen to you all the great years that you spent in Detroit, and then get to know you personally, and guys like you and Dave Schaefer, I mean, these will always be there.
Oh, what a sadness that was with that story of Dave.
Dave and I worked together at WCAR for a while in the early 70s with Paul Christie, who we just unfortunately lost as well.
Recently. I heard that also, another sad story. Gee.
And when I got to work with Dave, it was an honor. But, Tom, you provided so many of us with so many great memories and the days at CK and JBK and Magic in the Morning.
Oh, Magic in the Morning and Tower. Yeah, I guess I worked at most all of them.
Yeah, and I just wanted to thank you, and great that John was able to get you on today, and people still remember you and talk about you, and you're a legend.
Well, thank you, Greg. I do appreciate that.
All right, Tom, and all the best to you out in California.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Great guy there, Greg Innes, and he certainly, has been around the Detroit radio scene for some time as well. It's just wonderful getting all these great calls. And Tom, you know, even though Detroit is not where you were born or whatever, you know, you've got a piece of Detroit with you. What are your fondest memories of working in the Motor City?
Well, I tell you, yeah, it's like a second home to me. I mean, if anybody talks about, people assume that I am either Canadian, which is partly true, my mother's family was, but either that or I'm a native Detroiter. And when I talked to this woman going out to Detroit Memories out in Phoenix, she said, where were you born in, what area? And I said, I was born in Lackawanna, New York. I said, I'm not a native Detroiter, but I said, I feel like I am. I said, from 64 on, I spent cumulatively, as you even, I think, were more precise than I would be, I said 20 years, you said 18, but whatever it is.
Give or take a few days, right?
Yeah, I'll give a few days, a few give and takes in between, but it was about 20 years in round numbers, so that's a good chunk of my life and a lot of good memories. I don't know if I answered your question, but I found that Detroit, as big as it is, and when I say big, because it is a spread-out city, no matter what big area you come from, I came from a city much smaller. In its heyday, Buffalo was about 500,000. It's now probably 300,000 as people moved to the environs and then moved away. But in Detroit, I mean, you were talking back those days, 1.5 million in the right in the city.
Sure.
Or more. It was the sixth largest, and now today, I don't know where it is, but out here in California, I see the growth of San Jose, for example, which is now, I think, the sixth largest city, which was just a little a little small place in California.
All we knew about San Jose was the record by Dionne Warwick. That's all I knew about when I heard, do you know the way to San Jose? I didn't know anything about San Jose or even, you know, it was not thought of as a big city, but now it certainly is, that's for sure.
Yeah, and Hal David, who wrote the lyrics to that with Burt Bacharach, Hal David was stationed in the service here. There was an Air Force base.
Yeah.
Maybe there still is in San Jose, and that's where, do you know the way? Yeah, I know the one you mean, and that's true. My fondest memories of Detroit, I lived in so many places. I first came in, I was in Redford, mm-hmm. 7 Mile and Telegraph, right from the old Topinkas.
Oh, sure.
I remember the days, and I think I got there at the right time, because I remember, for all those memories of people who, you know, talk about the Detroit area, I remember the Verner's Plan on Woodward.
Sure.
I remember doing the Thanksgiving parade. I was the MC with the outfit and all that, singing Christmas carols on top of the old Hudson's building, which I guess is that gone, the big one?
Yeah, sadly it's gone, yeah. They imploded it, I want to say about 10 years ago, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was a while back, obviously. I've been gone a long time, but those are good memories. I mean,
sure.
And just traveling around and doing the things far out on Woodward Avenue, then going out. I lived in Farmington. I had a farm out in Oakland County what the heck was the road now? I had a farm, a 20-acre farm, and then I lived at one point. I lived up near, well, beyond you even. I lived in Lapeer.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah.
And I lived on Fish Lake Road. I had a farm there, about 40 acres with horses. I was always a horse wacko. I either, you know, boarded them someplace or had the farm. And eventually when I got married and the children came along and all that, I didn't have too much to do with the farm and horses. I had enough to take care of with the kids and the business.
Yeah, they can keep you busy. That's for doggone sure. Hey, we got another caller here, and let's go to the phone lines right now. We first want to let everybody know you're listening to WPON AM 1460, Walled Lake, Detroit. Our guest is Tom Shannon, Detroit radio personality, a legend in the Motor City. We're so honored to have him. And let's go to the phone line here. You're on the air. Who are we speaking with?
Jerry Skinner out in Farmington Hills.
Hello, Jerry.
Yeah, hi. And Tom, it's good to hear from you. I felt it's good to have you back in town. I appreciate everything you ever did in this town as far as for music and records. You know, it's fantastic.
Thank you, Jerry. What's your last name?
Skinner. I was just a regular listener. I used to remember listening to the Big 8U and Bearskin Rug about 11 o'clock at night.
Oh, yeah.
And the sun never sets on the Shannon Empire. And they have what's called the Golden Hour. You know, you played a little. Matter of fact, I think if I recall correctly, it started like oldies back. He started playing. He called the Million Dollar Weekend back about 1967. You know, he started playing the oldies. He spent like all weekend from Friday night on and
right,
played oldies.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah, the Million Dollar Weekend. Another thing I used to do was the countdown, and that transferred from whatever the old format was to when Drake Chenault took over. It became the Big 8 from Radio 80. Same station and everything, but just a different formatics. I remember, if I may tell you the story. I had a hand in writing and producing a record called Here Come the Judge, which was part of the shtick from Laugh-In.
Was that the Buena Vistas, I do believe, right?
Yes, and oddly enough, and this is funny because Paul Drew, I had to admit to people that I had something to do with that, and I had gotten Popcorn Wiley to do the, here come the judge, here come the judge. And it was a great talent, and Popcorn did the opening and then the stuff in between, and Freddie Saxon, who's another personality that I see out here in California, along with Robin Seymour, who I'll live out here. Freddie Saxon does some of the very interesting, does the imitation of, what was his name, Art Johnson, yeah. So I was doing the countdown, and the song was number one on the CK chart, legitimately. And I remember Paul Drew saying, you can't announce that record and play it. I said, well, how can I do the countdown? He said, because you have a part of that. I can't do that because that smacks of payola. I said, well, it's a number one record legitimately. I'm not forcing it to go anyplace. I don't have nothing to do with the music. And he said, oh, you can't. So he wouldn't let me announce the number one song.
This record is Here Come the Judge. That was recorded here in Detroit, right?
Yes, it sure was. Yeah, absolutely. At Terra Sherba, which was...
How's this, Tom? Listen. We're bringing Judy Kern into the studio to dance to this, okay? Did you get the Funk Brothers to play the licks in the back?
Some of the guys are there. I think Don Davis is in there. I think some of the guys were what I call peripheral Funk Brothers because it was Jack Ashford and Bob Babbitt and Mike Terry, who, and I'm trying to remember, Johnny Griffith, who's just deceased recently, passed. All those guys were just terrific musicians. And yes, that I can't remember the core because the Buena Vistas, depending on what we recorded, we did about eight tunes with them and eight things. They changed, you know, sometimes we couldn't get Pistol for the session. I used somebody else.
Sure.
I'm trying to remember who all the guys were, but that's an era that was wonderful and a great past. But the guys are out here, by the way, the Ralph and Tirana brothers.
Okay.
So they were the guys that ran Terra Sherma.
Sure.
Ralph Tirana and his brother, both of them, became Motown staples. I mean, they switched from Detroit. They closed Terra Sherma, went to Motown, and then came out here and worked with Motown in California. And Ralph lives in Monterey, which is just about 20 minutes from here, because I'm in Monterey, Carmel, Salinas, the Central Coast area. So it's really nice here. It's not too warm. It's not too cool. San Francisco gets a little cool.
Yeah.
And San Diego and Los Angeles get warm. But did we lose Jerry? I didn't mean to.
I'm still here.
No, he's still here. We've got him. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I told that story about the record. Because, already long
the $1 Million Weekend and then the countdown, which was, and I still remember that story because I was so frustrated that I couldn't play the record or say anything about it, and I didn't know how to get around it, and I didn't know how Drew would do it, but he just didn't want me to say anything. It was just, no, ladies and gentlemen, number one, boom, and here comes the judge.
Was that Paul Drew's voice on those? And now, ladies and gentlemen, Tom Shannon. Was that him?
No, that was, there were two voices. One was Bill Drake himself.
Oh, Bill Drake, okay.
The other one was another Buffalonian, Jimmy Davis, not the Jim Davis who I also work with,
mm-hmm.
passed away recently from
right.
WXYZ, another wonderful guy, but his name was James K. Davis, but he had to change it because of Jimmy Davis in Detroit, so he changed it, Paul Drew changed it, I guess, to Big Jim Edwards, because he was, Jimmy was...
Oh, Big Jim, okay, sure, I had the pleasure of meeting Jim, yes.
Big tall man, Jimmy's 6'7", huge guy, big guy, and today a vice president, general manager, and I think has a part ownership of some stations in, I want to say Delray Beach, but it's,
yes.
No, that's Boynton Beach, no, it's one of those beaches.
I know it's in Florida, you're absolutely right, and of course worked at the Big 8 for a while.
Oh, he sure did, and
yeah.
He worked in Dallas, he worked in, and back here in Buffalo, he really never, yes he did, he worked here very quickly, in a little small station, never did very well here, but... He and I have been friends for probably 45 years. So.
Oh, that's great. He's a great guy. Hey, Jerry, thank you for the call, okay?
One more quick question.
Oh, sure.
Now, finish up your career in radio in Buffalo, because I was going through Buffalo, crossing in the New York Thruway about 2002. And were you on a local FM oldie station there by chance?
Yes, I sure was. As a matter of fact, I had been doing shopping network television. I did the satellite uplink where we did it was out of Knoxville, Tennessee originally. Then we moved to Antioch right outside of, it was actually Nashville. And I did that because at one point I thought, well, that's it. Radio is, had it from me. It's all formatics. It's corporate broadcasting. It's this and that. I'd lost whatever that was, and somebody wanted me to come to work. And I said, what am I going to sell? And I went to do that. And I did that for about 5 years, and I had a chance to come back. They wanted to do Heritage Radio in Buffalo, and they said, people still remember you. I had been in Buffalo, like in Detroit, had been two or three different times and had been very successful. And so they said, would you come back? And I said, only if I can wrap it up, because I'd like to retire when I turn 65. And I was, I think, 60 then. And they gave me a five-year no-cut contract, gave me what I wanted, and moved me and just treated me like a prince. And, I mean, it was just wonderful. I came back. And then they wouldn't let me retire at 65, because I'm obviously older than that. Actually, I'll be truthful with you. I'll be 70 in what, August? Yeah, August I'll be 70.
Oh, man. We thought you were still in your late 50s.
Oh, oh. You everywhere, John, and you and Jerry. Yeah. But I did come back to what was then called Oldies 104, which is not OMC as you have in Detroit.
Uh-huh.
It was 104.1, and I think they're 104.5 or 3, something like
here,
that.
Here, 0.3, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. 0.3. So I came back to Oldies 104, and they were for four of those years, and the fifth year they went to a little further down the road. They all get panicked because we don't have enough oldies. Our people are not with us anymore. They're dying off. They give you all these reasons. Then they started to move forward into 50s, 60s, then it went 60s, 70s, and I said, well, I still know the 70s. Hell, I played music until the 90s. I mean, I really did. So I said, you know, I know music even today. I haven't lost my ear, but I said, what I know best are the 50s, 60s, and, you know, some of the 70s. And they said, oh, no, stay. And they gave me a bonus to get. So I didn't retire until 2005, which would have made me 66, 67.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had gone beyond that, and now I'm a Medicare person.
Well, you're sounding great, and we're so happy. Jerry, thanks a lot for the call, my good friend.
Thank you. Thank you, Jerry. Good luck to you, Tom, and thanks for everything you've done here in Detroit.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you.
I'll tell you, we've just been overwhelmed by people who have called too, Tom, before the show. Just, you know, I've told people, yeah, we'll open up the phone lines, but I can't guarantee you're going to be on the air because we've just been, you know, one call after another here this afternoon. I want to ask you one question, and I'm going to let you go here because we've been just having too much fun here. It's over almost 70 minutes of your time, and I know you've got things to do, places to go. I just want to ask you one question. That is, of course, you were here during the infancy of Motown, when Motown really hit full throttle.
Right.
What is your most vivid memory of working with the folks from Motown? Is there any one specific time that it really hit home, like, wow, this is getting really, really big, or anybody that you came in contact with that has blew your socks off?
Well, you know, I still up until fairly recently have seen some of the acts, those that are still with us and everything. I did an oldie show just a couple of years back. Matter of fact, about a year and a half, I did one with Martha Reeves, and Martha got on stage with her current Vandellas and part of the whole thing, and they said, she's got up there, and I introduced myself to her on the back, and I had done a TV special with her on Channel 2 in Detroit, but it was Channel 2, JBK.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know what it is today. That's changed a lot, too. But I did a special at night with Jimmy Ruffin and Martha and the Vandellas and other things. And I worked with Martha before. And she said she was doing the show, and I introduced myself to her beforehand. And she said, oh, my God, Tom Shannon. So she got on stage, and she did the opening Dancing in the Street or whatever it was, and with the band and everything. And then she said, I got to tell you, she said, I was so thrilled to see, and she went on and on and on and about me, and I went, oh, my God, I had nothing, I mean, I had only the same amount that she was talking about CKLW, of course, and how it impacted the pop music market from just R&B and everything else, and how I had made her career, and I went, Martha, please, you know, don't do that, but you know, my vivid memory of Motown probably would have been, I first got there, 64, and I had had the Temptations before the personnel changes, many of the same were there, and I had Eddie Holland, and the Temptations came into Buffalo to do my television show,
mm-hmm.
63, I think. He had Jamie, I think, was the pretty good-sized record.
Oh, yes, it was.
It was a good record.
Sure.
And they had
about the Temptations had a song which didn't do as big as a lot of other ones, but I put them on the television show. And I met them after, and we talked and everything, and I said, gee, these guys are great. There's a little thing called Motown in Detroit, or whatever it was, Gordy Records. And then I got there, and in 64, I got an invitation to come to the Greystone Ballroom. I don't know if you know where that, it's probably not there anymore, but it was the Greystone Ballroom, used to be in the 40s, as I understand it from Detroit folklore, was the dance spot for the people of the big band generation and the era like that.
Sure.
Well, Gordy had bought the Greystone Ballroom, and they had a Christmas party, and I was invited. And I went there, and I was, you know, I was overwhelmed by some of these people whose names I was just starting to hear and had become friends with. Who was it? Martha the Vandellas. It wasn't so much Martha. It was one of the early members, and I can't remember her name. But to this day,
Mary Wells.
No, it wasn't. Well, Mary, I've also seen too over the years. But no, and I got to be friends with Smokey and with all those people, and got invited to parties with Eddie and Brian Holland. I mean, it was just a wonderful time.
Just a great time. Great time.
I mean, it was so exciting. I mean, have them on the air and 1 minute, and you'd be doing record hops with them, and all across the country, people would genuflect and say, oh, my God, you're from Detroit? Oh, yeah.
Just great. We got one more caller for you, Tom, and then we're gonna wrap it up, okay? Let's take this call here. Who's on the line?
Yeah, John, this is Dave. I'm Warren.
Hi, Dave. You got a question for Tom?
Yes, Tom. I'll make it real fast. Back in 1973, I went out to Denver to visit an aunt and uncle of mine that lived in suburban Arvada.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember turning in to one of their TV stations out there in Denver, Channel 9, as a matter of fact. And I swear, I thought I heard the name Tom Shannon. You were hosting a movie show.
Dave, you've got a great memory, except it was Channel 2. It was KWGN. It was WGN Chicago's sister station, and it was owned by the Tribune Broadcasting Company, which was a biggie in those days. This was the smaller operation, but it was big on cable. Plus, it was over the air on Channel 2. It wasn't a UHF. It was a VHF station. But you're right, Dave. I did a movie show, and, you know, the guy who brought me in was an ex-Detroiter, University of Michigan and all that, and he thought I was a Detroiter, and he said he remembers seeing me doing television and hearing me on the radio, and he said, you'd be perfect for what I want to do. I want to do a movie show. And I said, oh, you mean like Bill Kennedy does? And he said, yeah. I said, do you know anything about movies? I said, well, yeah, I love movies, but I don't do the Bill Kennedy thing. And I mean, Bill was in the movies.
Nobody can follow that act, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, how do you do that? So, but you know what I did? Dave and John, I borrowed, you remember when Bill would go to a commercial or go to a movie or talk about an interview he had on tape, he would go, and now, when he'd take his right hand and sweep it over, go,
absolutely. Absolutely.
We're going to a spot.
Right. If you remember that motion, I ended up doing that motion. I copied that. I must tell you, I plagiarized. But everything else I did was I think, pretty unique. I mean, and you know, when you think about it, Bill was ahead of his time. I certainly was ahead doing that in Denver and all of that Rocky Mountain West, because we were big on cable. Tribune already had, with WGN being a sister or a superstation, they were, you know, we went as far as Salt Lake City, I think, but I was in Bozeman, Montana, walking down a wooden sidewalk one time, and a guy came out of a barber shop and said, oh, my God, you're Tom Shannon. I said, how did he know that? Because he was watching it on cable. In those days, cable was, what it was designed for, was to bring, you know, to the rural areas, the television stations that didn't have them, or, you know, the programming. So, anyway, that whole thing was a wonderful time, and if you think about it today with Turner Classic Movies and AMC to a point where they have a guy hosting.
Right.
Robert Osborne does it, and he does a great job. That's what we were doing back then, and I said, who knew? I mean,
That's right. Hey, Dave, thanks for the call, my good friend.
Okay, thanks, John, and nice to talk to you, Tom. I remember your pictures on those old DKLW radio survey guides you used to get.
I have 1,000 of them. No, I have a few of them out here. I'm thinking of putting them on eBay. I start to see people tell me that they're selling for, you know, large amounts of money.
Are they really? Hey, Dave, I still got the ones you gave me. Don't worry, I'm not selling them, okay?
Okay.
All right. My good friend Dave over there, he's a good guy. Well, you know, Tom, I can't thank you enough for being with us here this afternoon. And you just brought so much to so many people here in the Motor City, probably more than you'll ever realize. You were the voice of my youth. I grew up listening to you, and I know there's so many people did. But it's not just that. You were always perceived and still are as a true gentleman, and by so many who know you, they'll justify that. And we want to wish you the best in your retirement, and you're always welcome to come on back here on WPON. We are copying this show. My music producer is doing so, and we will have that for you. We're going to send it out to you. So George Griggs, my good friend, is taking care of that. So we'll get that.
Oh, my gosh. Say hello to George. I know George.
Sure. George is my music director, and he was trying to call here. Georgie, if you... Georgie was trying to call, but I don't know. He might have been caught up in something. Plus, we only had so much time to take calls here, but he will definitely get that out to you. I might have to email you to know exactly where to send it to, but we'll take care of that and get it out to you. But we can't thank you enough for taking time out. We know there's a time difference there in California, so you got up special early to do this with us, and we're so pleased that you were able to do so. Okay, did I lose you again, Tom?
Oh, I'm here. No,
okay.
That was the
other line we had that was just going crazy. Okay.
No, I'm still here, but I want to thank you. That was very, very nice. And, again, it's very flattering to hear this. I mean, it makes you an old man, I feel good.
Well, your work certainly was not in vain, and... It was just a magical time in this city, turning on CKLW and all the other radio stations, and even Channel 9. You know, I grew up watching Channel 9. I remember Bill Kennedy and Mary Morgan and Jingles and Poop Deck Paul and Captain Jolly. It was just a great time to grow up in this city, and you're just one of the many people who made it that much better here for all of us, and we want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Thank you, Johnny. I can't believe that you remember, because I worked with Mary Morgan. Late Mary Morgan and Austin Grant and Bill Kennedy, and I'm trying to Poop Deck Paul, and I guess he just passed away fairly recently.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Tells me that.
We remember Mary's little dog there, that Liebchen, the little dog she had there, that Dash Hound. Remember the dog that would sit on the couch next to her while she was in the middle of a movie?
You know what? That wasn't fake either. I mean, she had that dog every place she went. She'd do a little feature in one of our sub-studios, and I'd see her with that little dachshund or the dachshund or whatever.
Yeah.
And I thought it was called Shotzi, but I guess it was Liebchen, wasn't it? Yeah, Liebchen.
Yeah. And you had to watch your P's and Q's around Mary, I think, right? She was pretty particular.
She was very redheaded, nice-looking woman for whatever her age was.
Yeah.
I'm guessing she was probably in her 60s or 70s then when I was in my, 30s, 20, late 20s, something like that. But anyway, yeah, she was a very elegant lady, too, carried the dog, and everybody sort of made way for Mary.
Well, Tom, if you ever, get homesick for this area, you can always give us a call here. We're on the World Wide Web. I know you had some problems picking us up on your computer. I'll try and find out why that's a problem for you and get you an email back so that you can listen to the rare oldies here in the Motor City. And we have a lot of fun, and you're always welcome to come on back and chime in anytime, okay? You've got carte blanche with us.
Well, thank you, John. One more quick thing. I do get back there because I have a son who lives in Grosse Pointe.
Oh, you do? Oh, wonderful.
Yep. Well, so I may see you quicker than you think.
Well, that's wonderful. If you're coming into town, give me a call, and maybe we can hook up, and I'll buy you dinner, okay?
That sounds good.
Thanks, okay. John. Tom Shannon, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Tom. God bless.
Thank you. Thank you, John.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tell you talk about a gentleman, there he is, Tom Shannon. They say you can't go back, but from time to time you certainly can, and all I could think of was turning on that transistor radio and listening to the Big 8. I want to thank everyone who called. For those of you who were not able to get in, maybe we'll get Tommy back at another time. I'm sure he'll come back again, and it was just a magical hour and 25 minutes, and my Lord, it seemed like 5 minutes. It went so fast, and it was so enjoyable. I want to thank everybody. I want to thank my good friend George Griggs, who's recording the show. I want to thank my good friend Greg Innes as well. I want to thank Kevin O'Neill, who called. Thanks to Dave out in Warren. Thanks to Jerry, who called. thanks to all of you who tried to get in. I know a lot of people were unable to do so. And like I say, we'll try and do it again. The Rare Oldies will continue here on WPON Radio. I'll be back here at the microphone on Wednesday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Jimmy James will be here at 2 p.m. Don't forget, we'll have our Monday entourage of soul and rhythm and blues with David Washington and the 20 Grand Review starting at 4 o'clock. AM 1460 WPON, Wall Lake, Detroit. This is Jukebox John. You have yourself a wonderful Monday. So long, everybody. The oldies will continue all hour long, and Jimmy James is here at 2 o'clock.